Governor DeSantis throws a punch at big tech. Will a new law stand once it hits the courts? Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. DeSantis signed a law that could mean hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines if sites like Facebook and Twitter throw Florida politicians off their platforms. This comes on the heels of DeSantis' political ally, Donald J. Trump, being thrown off of both. Can Florida do this? What's going to happen once it hits the courts? Also, school is almost out. This graduating class is unique in so many ways. It's learned through a pandemic with virtual schooling and class with masks. We're going to hear from students themselves, a panel representing schools across South Florida. If you're a member of this class, share your thoughts on social media at WLRN Sundial. All of that today on the program, after the news. This program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us today. Social media companies are facing challenges in the Sunshine State through a new law signed by Governor Ron DeSantis. Speaking from FIU on Monday, DeSantis argued that the, quote, big tech has too much power over the speech of individuals and politicians.
Some of these massive companies in Silicon Valley are exerting a power over our population.
Now, he made that speech, by the way, at FIU. Under the new law, individuals could file lawsuits if they believe they've been unfairly removed from a platform like Facebook or Twitter. Tech companies must be transparent about their content policies, and they could be fined up to $250,000 a day when Florida politicians running for statewide office are removed. While state Republican leadership see the law as necessary for free speech for users, critics argue it violates free speech for companies and will likely face challenges in court. Joining us now is FIU professor of law, Howard Wasserman. He's written extensively on First Amendment classes. Mr. Wasserman, you followed this bill over the past several months before it was signed into law by the governor. What primary concerns does it raise regarding the First Amendment?
So the speech platforms or the social media companies are private entities that have opened their sites to some users to engage in their own speech. But because the companies are private entities, they retain their own First Amendment rights to decide who gets access to the site and what gets said. And they can be as permissive or as restrictive as they wish to be.
And there have been lawsuits in the past from individuals who've been removed from social media platforms, and they've argued that that's a violation of their free speech. How have judges ruled in those cases?
The courts have rejected those claims, and what they've said is that YouTube or Twitter is a private entity, that it's not the government, and so it cannot violate the First Amendment rights of any of its users.
All right. So the legislation, as we've seen it, includes multiple avenues where legal action could be taken from individuals, Florida politicians, also from the state attorney general. There's also a provision that states if social media companies are found violating the state's antitrust law, they'll be restricted from contracting with any public entity. Is this provision also likely to be struck down for First Amendment rights?
On its face, no, because the government can condition whether it chooses to or who it chooses to contract with based on following the law. But if they are defining what is an antitrust violation in a way that puts a company on the list because of their First Amendment protected activities, that becomes a problem. So if the reason that they've decided that Facebook is violating Florida antitrust law is that Florida is engaging in conduct that is protected by the First Amendment in regulating who has access to its site, then effectively the government is deciding who to contract with based on protected speech, and the government can't do that.
Is Florida the first state to pursue this kind of action against some of the big tech?
It is. A number of Republican-controlled states have been had started talking about doing this since basically January, when in the wake of the January 6th events, then President Trump was barred from Twitter and from Facebook. Florida is the first one to act. Texas had one before it, but the session ended before it could pass it.
Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, when we look at specifically, they have faced some real significant political pressure from many fronts. There were congressional hearings following the 2016 presidential election about the role of misinformation that was being spread. And of course, the most recent is the removal of former President Donald J. Trump from Twitter and Facebook following the January 6th Capitol insurrection. How do you believe these political pressures played a role in the creation of Florida's law?
Well, I mean, Florida enacted the law as an act of political pressure. I think even if you can look at the law and say this is not going to withstand First Amendment scrutiny and it's not going to be enforceable, the fact that it's been enacted puts a certain amount of pressure on the social media companies to try to steer clear of the line and steer clear of angering politicians who would enact a law like this. And so the result may be that even if they're inclined to remove someone or to flag or block certain statements, they won't do it for fear of running afoul of this type of law and running afoul of the political leaders who would push something like this.
And also another interesting point to this is there was a carve out that in this law that excludes companies that operate theme parks. And, you know, it what appears to be a very clear attempt to shield Disney from any legal challenges. Is that political, or is that just because Disney's such a big employer in the state of Florida?
Well, those two are the same thing. That's purely political, but I think something like that is going to be used by Facebook and Twitter and YouTube in their First Amendment challenge, because it shows that they are not really serious about what they're trying to do or what they're purporting to try to do here, and that they are making certain exceptions based on the identity of speakers. They're treating different speakers differently, and the First Amendment says you can't do that.
I'm speaking with the FIU professor of law, Howard Wasserman. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a new law on FIU's campus on Monday, which targets large tech companies for basically deplatforming Florida politicians and individuals for their political beliefs. You can find more of this story, by the way, on our social media at WLRN Sundial. So, Professor, this is a Florida law, but it applies to these tech companies that have an international presence. What's the process going to look like when these companies file lawsuits?
So the lawsuits will be filed in presumably federal court in Florida. And the court will, you know, the courts in Florida, or the federal court in Florida will decide the constitutional validity of it, and it'll be litigated through the federal courts. The fact that they apply internationally just lends a greater urgency for the social media companies to try to have this law declared invalid, because as long as it remains in place and enforceable, it puts the social media companies to the burden of having to adjust the way they operate and the speech they allow or don't allow to the lowest common denominator, to the most restrictive state.
Yeah.
So that's another possible defect with the law, is that it is imposing a state-specific limitation on a company that operates nationwide.
And, you know, once the law goes into effect, that's when we'd expect the lawsuits to come. But while they're in litigation, can there be fines? Can it be enforced?
No, what I expect to happen is that the lawsuit will be filed the morning that the law goes into effect on July 1st, and that the court will very quickly issue what's called a preliminary injunction. So an order prohibiting Florida from enforcing the law while litigation is pending.
You know, again, considering the politics surrounding this bill, it was signed on your college's campus. It was at the new Adam Smith Center for Economic Freedom, which the center's director called a nonpartisan think tank. How do you feel about FIU hosting the governor signing this bill?
FIU is a public forum, and so it is going to host political activities of all kinds. President Obama spoke here. President Trump spoke here. It's part of a university's mission is to give ideas of all different stripes a forum on which to be presented.
But to sign a bill, to sign it into law, is that the same as giving a speech?
I don't see a difference between them.
Okay. Do you think this has any chance once it goes to court? What's going to happen?
It's going to be declared invalid. I don't think there is any chance that this law survives, because in order for it to survive, it would require a fundamental reinterpretation of the First Amendment. It would require a new theoretical foundation for free speech, in which private actors that provide forums for speech are treated differently than, say, a newspaper or a magazine or a radio station. And not only can't the lower courts do that fundamental rethinking of First Amendment theory, only the Supreme Court could. There's no appetite that I can tell on this court for that sort of reconfiguration of First Amendment theory.
So even if it doesn't have a chance in the courts, do you think that it could have any impact on how these social media companies police their users?
It might. I mean, that's why the litigation, as soon as the law becomes effective, is so important, because the companies want to avoid having to operate even for a short period under the limitations and uncertainties that this law is going to create for them.
He is FIU Professor of Law Howard Wasserman. Professor Wasserman, it's a pleasure. Thank you for the insight.
Thank you for having me.
And you can find more on this story. Just go to our social media at WLRN Sundial. Well, still to come, a panel of high schoolers on the verge of graduation, lessons from this year's graduating class and their experience living through a pandemic. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. This year was unlike any other for thousands of high school seniors across South Florida. Typically, senior years filled with events like prom and field trips and senior brunch and then, of course, graduation. But many seniors spent the entirety of this academic year online, with events being canceled due to COVID-19. Many others came into the classroom, but they had to wear masks and, well, the experience was just really different. We are just weeks away from graduation, so today we're going to hear from high schoolers themselves. I want to introduce our panel today. We're talking with Erica Tunay from Key West High School, Elise Thomas from the School of Advanced Studies, Wolfson Campus, and Jeremy Acaba from Hollywood Hills High School. He's part of the JROTC on campus. Erica, Elise, Jeremy, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for having us.
Definitely great to have you. I also want to bring in WLRN inter Saria Reimer. She's a senior at Mast FIU, the Biscayne Bay campus. She's been with us on our Sundial team now for this past year, so I'm sad to see her go soon, but I'm happy that she's got college coming up next. So, Saria, great to finally have you on the program with me.
having me, Lewis.
All right. I want to start with this. I want to, just in a couple of sentences, I want to get a sense of what the experience of your senior year has been like. I remember my senior year millions of years ago. It was supposed to be a lot of fun, and it was. But you guys, and you experienced something nobody ever has in 100 years. Let me start with you, Erica. How would you describe your senior year living through this pandemic?
It's honestly been really weird because we started off online, but then we went in person. But only half the school went on one day, and then the other half went on the other day. So you never saw, like, all your friends. And it would be segregated by last name. So if your friend was in, like, A through L, then you wouldn't be able to see them, which sucked.
Oh, my God. That is, you know what? I just realized half of my friends wouldn't have been hanging out with me then because I was in the first group and they would have been in the second group. That's terrible. Oh, my goodness. Elise, what about you? What was it like? How would you describe your senior year?
Oh, well, it was really overwhelming with applying to college and then also the scholarship application process alongside just living through a pandemic in general. But I will say there are a lot of really exciting aspects of the year that I'm really appreciative for, and the idea of going to college soon is also really exciting, and I'm very excited to graduate.
Yeah. Congratulations to all of you, by the way. Elise, what's one? You said there's some good things that came out of this. Just tell me one really good one.
Yeah, I was named a winner in the National Young Arts Competition, so I was able to connect with artists from around the country and just develop my craft more. So that was really wonderful.
Oh, congratulations. That's fantastic. Jeremy, what about you? How would you describe your senior year?
Honestly, it did not feel like a senior year at all. Like, at the beginning of the school year, we weren't going to school. It was all online. And then now towards the end, I'm just going to school for picking up my awards and, like, going to some events for, like, end of year celebrations. And now that I'm back on campus, it literally feels like I graduated last year and I'm just there visiting. So it's really, really different.
Oh, wow. I can't imagine. Again, we're talking with graduating seniors about, you know, what it was like spending their senior year living in a pandemic. And, you know, as you heard, some of them were learning at home. Some of them did go back to school, but it just wasn't even close to the same. And if you're a senior, if you finished all your tests, we'd love to hear from you. You find us on social media, on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial, and share with us what's one thing about this year that you would describe your senior year. How would you describe it? Was it terrible? Was there anything good about it? Again, find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Erica, you started the year online. You eventually got back to in person. And I just wanted to dig a little bit more into what that experience was like for you. Paint the picture of what a classroom looked like, what the halls looked like, what, you know, just your typical day was like.
Honestly, walking in was kind of weird because it was like kind of bare and like there was barely any kids. And when I'd walk into the classroom, there's only like at least 7 of us just in the classroom. And it felt weird because I feel like I couldn't talk to anyone. Everyone had their masks up as they should. But it was like weird because then like you couldn't really be engaged in the class because no one like actually felt like learning. Like there was like no purpose in being there when we could have just been online.
And, you know, did they get strict on, like, socialization? Like, if, you know, you saw your friends, you wanted to go hang out with them, did they tell you you couldn't do that? Or, I mean, what was that like?
Like, there'd always be social distancing. So, like, we'd be spread out in a classroom. And then, especially at lunch, we'd always have spaces between us. We'd have to sit on a dot at lunch, and you couldn't be next to someone in the cafeteria or anything like that. So it was just weird having to, like, talk to someone. Like having to like, and like, we couldn't like take down our mask at all in class to talk. So
did you get in trouble if you did?
Yeah, you would. They'd tell you to put your mask up. And like, it was weird because we had like so many cases at the school one time. And like, it was a bunch of contact tracing and like half the school had to stay home and quarantine.
Mm. Jeremy, I'd imagine that at least being back at school, you know, you got to have that in-person learning. That, I mean, did you crave that? Did you want that?
Well, for me, I did virtually the whole school year. I only went in person for just like extracurricular activities.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't really get to experience the in-person learning.
And what activities? Like which ones?
Okay, so we had our National Honor Society induction ceremony, which was in person, but parents weren't allowed to go. It was just the students and the officers, and then we just live streamed them for the parents to watch. And then we have a couple, like for the seniors, we had award ceremony. So we were able to go have a small group of us go and just be like together with all the seniors and just catch up. So that was a really nice experience.
Mm. Oh, that's got to be terrible for the parents. I can only imagine. Elise, you did yours the whole year online, but you said there was good that came out of this, obviously, especially with your creativity. You're a poet. And you said that it really helped you. So, I mean, what did this process for you do for your creativity?
Yeah, so the past year, I've been able to create a lot more within the past year than I have in other school years. And that's been really wonderful. But I think what happened, I just experienced a lot of reflection this year and a lot of personal growth, and that really translates into my writing and also just being able to connect with more students around the country, although virtually, and, you know, kind of talking about our craft and having that community to help me sustain my practice has been really wonderful. And I'm excited to continue creating more into the future, but I'm definitely proud of a lot of the work that I came out with this year.
Mm. Do you think that you work better this way, or do you want to, you know, get back to regular life?
I think a lot of writing isn't the writing part, it's experiencing life. And so a lot of my work has been inspired by things I've been able to experience at home, but I'm really, really excited to gain inspiration from the outside world and interactions with other people.
Mm. So I want to mention too, by the way, that this this segment today was produced by our senior intern, Saria, and I want to get her in here to ask you guys some questions. And so Saria's got a question for you now. Saria, go ahead, take it away.
I am a high school senior, just like you guys are, and I definitely think so much of the senior excitement is about events like prom and grad bash and graduation. So I was wondering, what do these events look like this year? Are they happening, but just on a reduced scale? Are they canceled? Elise, let's start with you.
So my grad bash was canceled, unfortunately, and we are having graduation this year, which I'm super excited about. And we did have a drive-through academic signing day. So everyone came in their cars and some people decorated their cars with the colors of their school. And we announced where we were going and everyone was cheering us on. So that was really nice. And then we also had our senior brunch, and it was just a very chill event at campus. And we all dressed up and had a really nice time. But a lot of grad bash and also the winter trip and homecoming were canceled, and prom.
Erica, what about you? What kind of events did you have?
So our grad bash was canceled as well, but we were able to have prom, which just happened 2 days ago. And our graduation is still happening as well, which I'm excited for.
Right. And for listeners who don't know, grad bash is typically the senior trip to Universal, where you go at night instead of during the day. And so lastly, Jeremy, what kind of events did you have this year as a senior?
Yeah, so our prom was completely canceled. So instead of a prom, we had a senior picnic, which was not really an alternative, but I guess it was just another event for like a senior social gathering. So we just like met at our football stadium, and then we just had a little picnic with everybody and we played some games. So I guess that's something. And then as for our graduation, we are having it in person, thankfully, but only two guests can go. And it's also at another school's gym. So, you know, the location's not the best, but it's something.
And something's always better than nothing. And, you know, I got to tell you, I never thought about the fact that all of those events that that I got to enjoy, I took them for granted. I did still enjoy them, but I think I took them for granted sometimes. And it's a terrible thing to have to miss. Again, we're talking with a group of high school seniors graduating this year in a few weeks, actually, and talking about this very unique aspect of their lives, because this class, unlike any other, had to experience their senior year through a pandemic. And that is something that nobody else will ever have. I want to, again, just remind you of our guest, Erica Tune from Key West High School, Elise Thomas from the School of Advanced Studies at Wolfson Campus, and Jeremy Acaba from Hollywood Hills High School. We're also joined by our intern, Saria Reimer, who's a senior at Mast FIU. And again, if you're a graduating senior, how would you describe your senior year? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. And a sentence or two, tell us. Let us know what you think of this this past year. All right, Saria, you also wanted to ask him a question about friendships. And we kind of heard a little bit about this. And I can only imagine how tough it must have been.
So, yeah, like Lewis said, I was wondering in the course of COVID-19, how that's impacted your friendships, especially your relationships with those who social distance versus those who didn't, as we all had to make, you know, choices about our own health and our own safety. Elise, I can start with you.
I think I learned how to maintain a connection with friends online. You know, typically a lot of my friendships were formed at school and through that shared experience of, you know, having classes and taking the same classes as your peers. But it was a little challenging at first to stay connected to my friends, but I think over the course of this year, a lot of my friendships have deepened through Zoom or just texting. And so I've been able to meet a lot more people as we continue to communicate virtually. And I'm really, really glad that I was able to meet some people that I never would have if the pandemic never occurred.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I think of so many online friends that I've made this past year that it would have never happened if there wasn't a COVID-19 experience. Although on the other flip side for me, I found friendships that have suffered as a result of those who choose not to social distance. So pivoting back to Jeremy, what was your friendships like during COVID-19?
That's really interesting. I just spent the majority of my time with just one group of friends. It's just me and two other people. And we've been together since like the whole quarantine and everything, because we just like work on projects here and then. So I guess we just kind of stuck together. And then that friend group, we just kind of stuck together. And then I didn't really necessarily need to like expand anywhere else because, you know, pandemic and everything. So I just felt safe with that one group, and I just stayed with that one group.
Erica, what about you?
I'm kind of in the same situation as Jeremy. I've stayed with the same friend group, and we've all like been quarantined together too, like from everyone. So we wouldn't really necessarily hang out with other people. It would just be me and my friends. So I don't think I suffered any friend group losses because I've been friends with these people since freshman year. So yeah.
That's really good to hear, and that's good to know. And you know it's a friend if they stick with you through this, then that's a good friend you're going to have for a long time. This pandemic has taken a toll on everybody, you know, our mental health and all the challenges that we face. And I wondered, did you have the support you needed? And I mean, like from the schools, from your teacher, did they offer you enough support when it was there? Elise, was there any problem getting help if you needed it, reaching out, or was it lacking?
I think that my school and just my friends and family in general are a wonderful support system, and they always make it clear of the resources that are available to us and to always reach out if we ever, you know, feel like we need to. I do think that I didn't take as much advantage of those resources simply because I'm very reserved and I don't really like to talk about personal issues with other people, but they were definitely there and I always knew that I was supported and cared for.
Hmm. Erica, what did the schools offer when it came to mental health? What did the teachers tell you?
Honestly, like my personal experience, they didn't really help, to be honest.
Hmm.
Like, it was kind of hard to communicate with our teachers because it's like we don't really know them like that, because usually when you're in a classroom, you're able to talk to your teacher and get to know each other and how things work. But it was just harder this year to do that.
So, but anybody from the school, were you able to, if you had to reach out to them, or if any of your friends did, was they accessible, or did you just feel like no?
I mean, they were accessible, but I don't think anyone actually approached them about anything. About like how they were feeling about the whole quarantining.
Hmm. Jeremy, You know what, Jeremy, if you spent most of the year online, did you know these teachers? Did you get to know them? I don't know if, like, you know, your junior year you had any of them, but did you get to know any of them at least? Or, I mean, was it just that distance learning and you just saw them? You really didn't get to know them.
Luckily, because I'm like an active member of my school, so I kind of just know every teacher. So that was what's going on, what's like good for me. But the class online just consisted of just a whole bunch of like little squares with no pictures or no photos or anything. So it was really hard to like communicate and whatnot, but luckily I knew my teacher. And as far for mental health, my administration is always talking about how there's always like counselors and people that can help if you're having any situations or you're struggling. So yeah, I think my school handles that pretty well.
Mm. I think about some of my former teachers. It was a lot more fun when I was in class with them. Again, talking with the graduating seniors, and we'd love to hear from you if you are one of the graduating seniors this year, how you would describe this past year. You can post that message to us on social media at Facebook or on Twitter at WLRN Sundial. I wanted to get to this process of it, you know, getting preparing yourself for college. And, you know, filling out those applications and forms and everything else. Elise, what was that process like for you? You know, again, in looking for the right school and getting everything out there on time.
Oh my gosh, I am the worst procrastinator ever.
I've heard a lot of people say that.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely terrible. So sometimes I was writing essays at the last minute, submitting at that 11:59 p.m. deadline. But I think a majority of my application process, I try to stay on top of myself. And I was able to meet all of my deadlines. And I guess when it came down to researching schools, I was just looking for institutions that were best fit towards my academic goals and then also, you know, what type of community I want to be a part of. But the college application process was so stressful, I never want to go through it again.
And where are you going to be going off to?
I will be attending Yale University this fall.
Fantastic. Now, you're going to the school and you're going to live there and, you know, go to class, and you're going to basically do it as we were doing it before the pandemic, right?
Yes, I am. Everyone has to be vaccinated, but everyone will be on campus and all of the events will be held like regular.
Do you think that you're going to, you know, kind of go back to what it was like before the pandemic and just be comfortable being around people, or are you still being precautious?
I definitely will still be cautious. I know I will wear my mask when I'm outside still, but I definitely will feel more comfortable hanging out with people, and then maybe not social distancing as much since everyone will be vaccinated, and then also not being afraid to take off my mask in social space.
Jeremy, you chose the college you're attending in the fall, American University, and you didn't visit it, right?
I did not get to visit it, and that was like one of the things I was worrying about. But everybody I've talked to who is going to American University or is going to American University and got the chance to visit said it's a beautiful campus and it's amazing. So I'm hoping it lives up to the expectations.
It's one of those, the buyer who didn't see, you're going to show up. You're part of ROTC at your high school. Do you hope to make connections through, you know, those interested in the military?
I do.
And they have a program up there, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah, they have a program. Well, American University itself doesn't, but they do partner with Georgetown and Howard University, which are Air Force and Army ROTC.
Mm. And the same for you. I mean, when you get up there, how do you think you're going to, you know, react? And you know, do you think that you'll be comfortable just going back to normal life and interacting with everybody?
I definitely think I'm still going to have some precautions, especially with like people I don't know. But for like those like closer friends that I do know, I'm definitely going to be a lot lenient, I guess. There is not going to be that much social distancing and like no mask type of thing. But for people that I don't know and I don't necessarily know what they're doing, it's going to be mask and social distancing.
Mm. And Erica, you are attending University of Central Florida, correct?
Yes, I am.
All right. Is it easy for you, an easy choice? You wanted to stay in Florida?
Yes, I do. I just felt more comfortable, and my brother went there, so I was able to go there and check it out before the pandemic happened.
All right. And what about you? Like everybody else, I want to know, are you going to be, you know, going back to life before the pandemic? You're going to just, you know, you feel comfortable vaccinated. You feel comfortable being around people, or do you think you might have to take it easy and still be careful?
I think I'm still going to be cautious, like Jeremy, like with the people I know. I'm going to keep my mask on probably with like people that I don't know as well. So, yeah.
All right. I want to bring Saria back in here because she has a big question for you guys about, again, about this experience and what it's done to you. And I guess, how you would use this information and this knowledge. But Saria, yeah, I love this question. Go ahead.
Lastly, we're all sort of moving on to the next stage of our life, graduating high school and going to college. So if you could give one piece of advice to your freshman year self, knowing what you know now, having experienced the pandemic, what would it be? Elise, we can start with you.
Ooh, I would tell freshman year me that it's not that serious. This pandemic made me realize that a lot of the things I was stressed about weren't as deep as I thought that they were, and I'll end up being okay in the end. Everything happens for a reason, and everything will work out, but it's not that serious, and everything's okay.
That's a really sweet sentiment. Erica, what about you?
I would tell my freshman year self to not be scared and to like go out of her comfort zone, which I now know that it's like okay to like do what you want to do and not what someone else wants to do.
Yeah, I definitely can resonate with that a lot. Jeremy, what would you tell your freshman year self?
I would agree with Erica on the get out of your shell type of thing, because it took me almost like 3 years to learn how to do that. So definitely getting like a head start on that would be amazing. And also just like sticking to a schedule, you know, like making sure that I'm doing what I need to be doing and not procrastinating as much.
That's the second person I've heard who says they procrastinate. You see, I knew it. It's senioritis, guys. It's called senioritis. It is, yeah. We all had it. I had it. It's okay. You know what, Saria? Let me turn that question on you. What's the advice you give your freshman self?
I think if I could tell my freshman year self one thing that I actually ended up doing is to do the things that you want to do. Don't do them because you think they'll fit a college resume or because they think that's what you're supposed to do. If you end up doing the things you love, like for me, I love working at WLRN. I love this internship. Then you'll be good at it and you'll, you know, produce like the kind of work that you're proud of. So I think if I could tell my freshman yourself one thing, it would be that. And also that she isn't going to go into STEM. So she needs to stop.
And by the way, Saria, you also are going to American University. I mean, you've been telling us all about your dorm and how you're going to decorate it and all these things, but I never heard from you, you know, how you plan on living your life. Are you going to be careful while you're up there, or because, you know, you feel safe enough that you can get back to normal?
I'm very grateful to be fully vaccinated. And I think with that in mind, I wouldn't employ like social distancing or masks around other fully vaccinated people. But I think for a pretty long time, when I'm on the bus on campus or on the train or in like more crowded areas, I think just for the safety of others, as well as my own safety, I wouldn't mind putting on my mask. But, it's a personal decision and we all just have to exercise our best judgment because the pandemic is not over.
Yeah. When I think about this pandemic, I think about how, and because I'm fascinated by generations, how different generations have handled it. Being a Gen Xer, I think about how I was raised and how we probably would have handled this. I don't know if it would have been any better, but I'd love to hear from each of you about, what's the one thing you think that all the other older generations, millennials and Xers and boomers, should know about your generation, in light of this pandemic, what we should know about you guys and how it's affected you. Elise, let me start with you.
I think our generation is so resilient. We have turned one of the worst situations into a positive, and we've really come together to talk about our shared experiences, you know, ways we've been struggling, our different wins. And so I'm really proud and inspired by Gen Z for getting through this, because I can't imagine another generation getting through it. And I think we've done a wonderful job, and I'm really excited to see everything else that we do in the future.
And it sounds like, you know, again, hearing from you that, you know, you turned this into a positive for yourself, didn't you? It seems like.
I tried my best. I try to be optimistic, but yeah, it's better to look at it positively than negatively.
Erica, what about you? What do you want the rest of us to think about your generation, how you did this?
I definitely think that our generation honestly unified with because of this pandemic. Because, like, I don't think any generation could have, like, dealt with it like we did, since we have the technology and we were able to, like, keep doing school on the phone or talking to our friends and things like that. So I think we did pretty good, to be honest, like Elise said.
Yeah. Jeremy, what about you?
Yeah, honestly, this is a really interesting question, but I would say that we learned how to adapt to our surroundings. And because we saw everything, we usually just do everything online, but everything just fully integrated online. And that was kind of a really big change for us, because that kind of took out our social interactions. And I think that's one of the big things, like, as especially us, like teenagers, we're pretty impressionable. So the lack of social interactions, this might be like a really significant, something that happened during quarantine. Yeah.
Yeah. So you think that being socially or digitally savvy, you know, that was your advantage.
Right.
Very interesting. You know what, Saria, share your thoughts on this.
I definitely agree with what Jeremy is saying. I think about my experience during the pandemic, which was isolating at times, but I had movie nights with my friends over Zoom. I could FaceTime them. But maybe when I call up my grandparents, who are of a different generation, they live in Long Island, and I'm like, what are you doing now? It's sort of, they're very much more stuck, like, in the same routine every day. So I certainly think that Gen Z being more tech savvy is kind of like this double-edged sword, because, yeah, it's easier for us to stay connected, but also you can really get lost in, like, these online worlds that aren't grounded in reality.
Yeah. And anybody want to jump in on this one? I mean, you know, yes, you're tech savvy, so you were able to jump into that online learning and online world a lot better than most, but you still missed out on something, right? I mean, you still missed out on that connection with people in person, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I agree
with you. All right, fantastic. Well, listen, I want to thank everybody here. First of all, congratulations to all of you for finishing high school. Not an easy thing to do. And I wish you all the best as you move forward in your college experience. Have fun. It's a blast of a time. Make the most of it. Again, I want to thank my guest, Erica Tunay from Key West High School, Elise Thomas from the School of Advanced Studies at Wolfson Campus, and Jeremy Acaba from Hollywood Hills High School. Erica, Elise, Jeremy, thank you so much. And Saria Reimer, who is our intern, graduating as well, heading off to college. Thank you, all of you, and congratulations.
Thank you,
Matt. Thank you so much.
All right. And by the way, you know what? We want to hear from you. You can always join conversations like this one. And you know the easiest way to do it is join our text club. Just send your thoughts on anything you hear. Type the word hello to 786-677-0767. Again, just type hello to 786-677-0767. That's a great way for us to keep in touch with you, and you can tell us about your thoughts on anything that you hear, but also you might even become part of the show in a future program. All right, still to come, let's continue this conversation with students about their experience throughout the pandemic with a virtual field trip. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. We're hearing from more students about their experience this past year. Before the pandemic, Maraisa Carrion hated school. She called it a joke. And now, after all this time learning from home instead of from her classroom at South Broward High School, well, her outlook has changed.
I feel like this is like a story to tell to like our kids and like our grandkids to tell them like, hey, like appreciate school, because I feel like I've never appreciated school more than I do now because of the pandemic.
Marisa is one of dozens of middle and high school students in South Florida who submitted videos, pictures, and letters to WLRN, sharing the experience and the struggles and even the unexpected joys of the last year. WLRN's Jessica Bakeman shares another student submission, a familiar scene featuring a sleepy teen and a vigilant mom.
At this point, I think a lot of us are familiar with this deep sigh when you're just so sick of staring at a computer screen. Woosley Nestor is 14 and a freshman at South Broward High School. In this video, he's sitting on his bed trying to pay attention to a lesson on his computer. Over time, he leans over. Then he lays down. Then he grabs a pillow and a blanket and drifts off to sleep. Until...
Wake up!
His mom screams at him from the doorway to his bedroom. We asked middle and high schoolers in South Florida to create messages to their future selves about what it was like to go to school during this pandemic. Woosley's video is an especially funny submission because he plays both characters in the scene.
Wake up! I'm awake.
He donned a wig and a pink robe when he was impersonating his mom.
Yeah. Stay awake.
She thought it was funny, and it was a pretty accurate representation of like how she is.
I talked to Woosley about his video during WLRN's virtual field trip to the South Florida Fair. There was an exhibit at the fair this year based on our class of COVID-19 project, looking at education during the pandemic.
When I fall asleep during class, she's always walking by, making sure that I'm awake and paying attention so that like I could focus and learn what I'm supposed to learn.
Is it that you find yourself sleepy or is it just that you're bored?
It's usually a mix of both because like not every time you can get a full rest of sleep. And like there are times where like the thing that the teacher is teaching doesn't really interest you. So like you can't stay focused on what they're saying. And eventually your body just like starts to doze off.
And I would imagine doing school from your bed probably doesn't help. Maybe if you were sitting in a chair at a desk, it would be a little easier to stay awake.
Yeah, that's what I do. Once I see myself start to fall asleep a lot, I move, sit on the table so that like I could have a correct posture so that I could stay awake better.
And that's exactly the right thing to do, according to Daliana Goins. She's the lead school counselor in Monroe County, and she also joined our virtual field trip.
Keeping to a schedule, sleeping, eating habits, exercising, getting out and getting some sunlight instead of being in bedrooms and in pajamas all day long. All of those things really work wonders for students and adults, actually.
Goins suggests carving out time in the day for activities that aren't necessarily related to school, and not just scrolling through social media feeds, but something that really stimulates your brain, like doing a puzzle, 1,000 pieces or more, or learning a new musical instrument.
I myself picked up the ukulele.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine.
This is Goins playing the first song she learned on the ukulele.
When skies are gray, you'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please.
This is how she ignited her joy. I'm Jessica Bakeman in Miami.
First song.
The things that we accomplished during this pandemic. Well, the South Florida Fair closed last weekend, but you can still experience our virtual field trip, plus find more student submissions at WLRN.org. And it's not too late to participate. You know, many middle and high school students can post their messages to their future selves on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok with the hashtag ClassOfCOVID. Make sure that you tag us at WLRN. We'll be sharing more responses soon on WLRN's social media. Well, that's our program for this Wednesday, May 26th. Sundial Senior Producer is Chris Remington. Leslie Ovalle is our producer and social media editor. Saria Reimer is our intern. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Our news director is Taryn Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's program director is Jason Zapka. Excuse me, he's gone. No, our technical supervisor and program director is Peter J. Meritz. By the way, the theme music is by the Miami Afro-Cuban funk band Palo at gopalo.com. Don't forget, you can download a podcast of this program. If you miss it, catch it at 8 o'clock, any of it. Or, again, just find it on your podcast app. And by the way, if you do listen to the program on the podcast, please always make sure to rate us because that definitely helps. All right, coming up tomorrow on the program, Memorial Day weekend has a long history in Miami Beach. Thousands of visitors travel from across the country to vacation, welcoming a lot of black tourists to the region. Given the issues that occurred during spring break, how do city officials plan to handle things differently? We're going to hear from Mayor Dan Gelber and learn more about the city's plans. Plus, this week marks 1 year since the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. We're going to learn how organizations have changed their internal procedures in the year of social justice protest. And by the way, you know that we have a book club, right? Of course you do. You've been following us for a while. We have a book club, and we announced yesterday the book that we're going to be reading for the month of June. All right, are you ready? Because I'm going to give you the title right now, so write it down. We are going to be reading The Key Lime Crime by Lucy Burdett. The Key Lime Crime, it is a lot of fun. Already started it. So get your copy now. It is also available in libraries. We're going to be talking with the author in a couple of weeks. And you know that we love to share your questions with the author. The authors love to hear your questions. So you can always find us on Facebook. Just go to Sundial Book Club, post your questions there. Let us know what you think of the book. And also tell us about what else you're reading. I'm really excited about this summer because we're going to do a special come July. But I'll tell you more about that later. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay safe, be good to each other. And remember, the program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute.